Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Speaking of reading, R. Kelly is the Chicago-based R&B superstar whose albums have sold hundreds of millions of copies worldwide. He's a multi-Grammy winner, and he's sung and produced with the who's who of pop and soul and hip-hop and R&B artists. You may not know his catalog well, and if you did, you'd probably blush, but I Believe I Can Fly is his mainstream signature song, and you've heard that. He's also the object of numerous lawsuits, documentaries, criminal charges for child pornography and sexual assault of minors. Rock critic Jim DeRogatis' new book, Soulless, The Case Against R. Kelly, has just come out, and it is a fascinating, damning, and amazing thing that R. Kelly isn't in jail right now. You'll meet Judge Gaughan in this book, Reverend Meeks, Reverend Jackson, the Adams father and son who defended him, among other attorneys and people that worked for R. Kelly, and countless young women and their parents pulled into the Kelly charismatic orbit. But most of all, you'll meet R. Kelly, and you will meet Jim DeRogatis, who has pursued this story often to small fanfare for two decades. The book is out now, and I said it, this will be the third time now. Every Chicagoan should read this book, and anybody who has somebody in their life interested in journalism should read this book. Jim, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing fine, John, and thank you for saying that. I mean, it is a book about journalism, about Chicago, and about the girls, more than it is about the guy on that cover.
Yeah, about R. Kelly, or you for that matter. So maybe you would disagree a little with the introduction, but you can't. It's the R. Kelly story. It's the narrative of R. Kelly from what you describe his upbringing in Chicago, which sure. I think is very interesting, to what happened in February of this year. Yeah. You're going to have to write an addendum to the book, aren't you?
Well, there'll be a paperback, and I can bring up to date the court case if it goes to trial. He's under indictment on 21 counts for four victims in Illinois now. But the federal investigation is ongoing. The grand jury is sitting. And I expect a press conference within 2 or 3 weeks at the Dirksen, unless they do it in New York, which would be inconvenient, as a result of the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and the IRS investigating what the book is about. 30 years of sex trafficking, obstruction of justice.
I told Steve Bertrand, I said to Steve in promoting this conversation, R. Kelly, if he thought about it, must think he's the luckiest man in the world that he isn't in jail. How, as it is so well known in the community, on the street, and for that matter in court records, how is it that he is not in jail for what he's been doing all these years?
He says that God is on his side, John. I have been unable to interview the Almighty to confirm or deny.
And now R. Kelly didn't talk to you before this book either.
No, I interviewed him initially at the Sun-Times when he had crafted You Are Not Alone, the first number one hit for Michael Jackson after he was accused of sex with a young boy, and the last of his career. It was a hell of a way for Jackson to go out.
R. Kelly, describe his music, describe his craft. Tell me about him, the artist.
It is, there is an incredible dichotomy between, and this is common in R&B, I think the greatest R&B singers, Marvin Gaye, Al Green, Donny Hathaway from Chicago, Prince, were able to merge sex and salvation. Saturday night, steamy fun between the sheets, Sunday morning in the choir. Kelly has two very distinct sides to his music. 85% of it is the hot and horny bedroom jams, and then 15% of it is praying to the Almighty for forgiveness for unnamed sins.
And his audience embraces both iterations, huh?
Oh, for sure. I mean, he is the dominant voice in R&B for two generations now. 100 million records sold, and being tapped to craft hits for everyone from Celine Dion and Whitney Houston to Justin Bieber, Lady Gaga, Chance the Rapper. He is a giant.
He is described in the book by many people as the soundtrack of their lives. If you were on the south or west side and you went to a barbecue.
Oh, yeah. Inescapable. He was the ultimate party jam, Ignition, I Believe I Can Fly, plays at kindergarten graduation ceremonies, I Wish in church, the choir singing.
He sang at World Cup. He sang at the Olympics. He sang Super Bowl. I mean, he's the... It's almost hard to minimize his success or his impact, right?
Well, this is where we get into race in Chicago. As you know, this is really two cities. There is the South and West Side, where there is, I mean, he is Michael Jordan times 10, you know, musically. And then there's White Chicago, where aside from I Believe I Can Fly, really, his music has never made the impact until 2013. An interesting thing happened where he is booked to headline the Pitchfork, Bonnaroo, and Coachella festivals, reaching out very consciously to a white indie rock audience, you know, the college rock kids. And they see it as sexual shtick, you know. And Dave Chappelle and many black comedians, by minimizing the charges against Kelly, which really are child rape, to a fetish, it turned it into a joke. You know, it became a joke. And that brings us to the, you know, nobody matters less in society than black women, which is only ever me amplifying what hundreds of black women have told me.
Well, what the evidence seems to detail in your book, but you just said child rape. I mean, so tell me the other side. Tell me this criminal or deviant side of R. Kelly.
Well, it is impossible in Chicago to talk to two or three black women without hearing the stories of Kelly cruising Whitney Young High School, Kenwood Academy, the Evergreen Plaza shopping mall, the rock and roll McDonald's.
The creepiest, by the way.
It is super
he had
creepy.
The third table on the left when you came into the McDonald's, that's where he would sit. The rock and roll McDonald's right over here.
Yeah,
it's not that anymore.
Yeah, now it's the green McDonald's. But, you know, he got out of jail after 3 days. It took him 3 days to post bond when he was indicted by the state of Illinois in early February. And fresh out of jail, he went.
This last time?
To the Rock and Roll McDonald's.
He went back over there?
Yeah.
Where he
picked up a 16-year-old after her high school prom in 1998, according to court records.
That was the lead in one of the stories nationally. I don't know if it was CNN or who was reporting it, but they said, you know, R. Kelly, da-da-da-da, who picked up a minor after being released on criminal sexual assault charges. I mean, the guy's unrepentant or almost unable to stop. But so, okay, so he has these places that he likes to scope teenage girls.
Yeah.
Keep going. What happens?
You know, he was indicted in 2002 for 21 counts of making child pornography.
That's based on a videotape, right?
26-minute and 39-second videotape, which is the most horrifying thing I've ever seen in my life. It came to my home on the Northwest Side.
Unannounced, somebody said, check your mailbox.
Go to your mailbox. Click. Hung up. I was working at home transcribing an interview.
Did you know that was R. Kelly on the tape?
Instantly. Yeah,
we
knew who the girl was because we had heard about this relationship when we reported the first story for the Chicago Sun-Times was December 21, 2000. We had heard about this ongoing relationship with a 14-year-old girl, and then 14 months after that first story, the videotape evidence.
So how old do you think that girl was in the video?
Oh, she was 14. I mean, I know that. You know, there were 15 witnesses that testified for the prosecution during the trial. It took 6 years to go to trial. Right.
And at that trial, that girl did not testify.
She didn't testify. Her mother, her father never testified. Her father played guitar on Kelly's recordings, including after this videotape surfaced. And the mother worked in his office. And she's still not cooperating now. She is one of the four victims in the state of Illinois indictment now.
You suggest that the parents offered their daughter, or knowing their daughter was being abused, didn't want to compromise what they had going with R. Kelly.
Let me refer you to the court testimony of one of Kelly's personal assistants who testified that the girl would regularly be brought to the recording studio by her mother and father with a pillow and an overnight bag.
And she's how old at this time?
14.
And did the parents know what was happening?
John, they brought her with her pillow and overnight bag to the recording studio of the man who called himself the sexual super freak, of the man who called himself the Pied Piper of R&B. Do you know the Pied Piper legend, John?
You know, I didn't. Listen, you criticize R. Kelly for not knowing the insinuation. I see the Pied Piper as the guy that plays the flute and all of the rats come out and then they drown, but I didn't remember the second half of the story.
Yeah. The villagers would not pay him for his extermination services, so he did the same thing and killed their children.
And so he says, well, I'm not about that. I'm just about, I'm a Pied Piper. I play music and people show up. But somebody said, yeah, but the reference is a little unfortunate for you. Maybe you ought to drop that. He said he wouldn't drop that.
Well, look,
and in fact, it's more apt in the long run.
In 1994, he recorded, wrote, produced the debut album by a brilliant young talent named Aaliyah from Detroit. He began sexual contact with her during the recording. She was 15. He was 27. And he titled the album Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. He has never hidden this behavior, John. It's there in the art, which is why I cannot forgive fellow music critics who would say, despite all that unpleasantness, R. Kelly is a genius.
Okay.
Because he's been confessing to this in song from day one.
But not in court. It is inaccurate to say he is guilty of this crime.
I don't know.
In a criminal sense, correct? He's never been found guilty of anything.
Yes, which does not, you know, not guilty doesn't equate to innocent.
Fair enough.
The jurors, Cook County's finest, our fellow citizens, had no doubt. They all said in interviews after the trial that it was R. Kelly. But because the girl did not testify and it was Father's Day weekend, they didn't want to be sequestered. And because Judge Vincent Gaughan threw the case for the defense in 6 years of closed chamber, sealed hearings, remained sealed. The Chicago Tribune, Sun-Times, Public Radio all sued to have those court records unsealed. Gaughan was, last year, scolded for patently unconstitutional behavior by the Illinois Supreme Court for the way he handled the shooting death of Laquan McDonald.
Jim DeRogatis is in the studio. He's the rock critic who's written the story of R. Kelly, Solace, the case against R. Kelly. You remember him from the Sun-Times. You may hear him at BEZ. You may read him in the New Yorker. He worked for Rolling Stone for a while as well. And you are critical of the other critics in the industry and maybe music fans in general. You feel that, and we'll get into this after a quick break, that you can't separate the artist from the art, so that if I love the music, but yeah, he's a terrible guy, can I still listen to and enjoy the music? And you have an interesting take on that after
I believe I can fly.
Come on, Jim. Put your hands in the air, back and forth. Come on with me now.
Think about it every night and day.
What's your review of this song?
Spread my wings and fly away.
You know, I was a Kelly fan, with reservations. You know, the challenge I think we are left in the Me Too Time's Up moment is separating the art from the artist. You teased that before. And I think 99.9% of the time, if not more, we can. If we were to impose a moral litmus test on every artist whose work we consume, there would be no art. And then there are some thorny exceptions. Michael Jackson. Right, my life's going to be poorer without Off the Wall or the Jackson 5. But his last two albums are full of protestations of his innocence in molesting young boys.
How about Bill Cosby?
Bill Cosby's a tough one. The hypocrisy inherent in the Cosby Show now, when you know he was not the perfect family man. Woody Allen. I love Midnight in Paris. I'm a Francophile. You know, it's got Dalí, it's got Hemingway. But Manhattan? About a middle-aged man pursuing a teenage girl. Yeah.
17. Was that legal? 17? Must have been. Maybe not.
It's not moral. Depends.
Okay.
Every state has a different age
of consent.
Bill
Cosby for a second, because that resonates more with me. We watched Bill Cosby. We loved him. I thought he was a force of good in this country, seeing a middle-class, successful black family. And I think that is still with me. That still forged a positive impression on me.
Yeah.
So what do I do with Bill Cosby now? Well, if a rerun comes on, are you saying the moral high ground is to not watch Bill Cosby?
Oh, no. I'm saying, and this is me in critic and professor mode, there's no wrong or right ever when it comes to art, John. I can't dictate what moves you or what, you know, shouldn't. I just think we have to be super aware of context. And what the Mute R. Kelly women, I'm doing an event talking with them tomorrow. What that movement said is Kelly is continuing to use his money to hurt women in our community, some of them underage girls. We should not pay for his concert tickets, pay for his music, because the only tool we have, you know, besides shouting about it, is to deny him his income to be, you know, I mean, the reason he has not gone to jail when pursuing this behavior since 1991 is, you know, being able to afford $650 an hour attorneys, being able to game the system, being able to pay off his accusers and make them sign non-disclosure agreements and their parents, he has bought his way out of trouble. And in the process, he has burned through, a quarter of $1 billion that he earned himself. He's broke, he says today, and I believe he is.
He had to get that lady from Bolingbrook, somebody bailed him out of jail.
When he was indicted in 2002 on child pornography, he cockily paid $750,000 bond with $750 bills. And so far in 2019, he has spent six nights in jail, twice, two different occasions, three nights and three nights, and couldn't raise the bond right away.
So talk to me about his music. So if I don't pay for it, how about I play it at my barbecue or graduation party?
See, I can't, if it has been part of your life, if Step in the Name of Love was your wedding song, or, I Believe I Can Fly was the high school prom theme, it is part of your life. I suppose it is as much yours now as it is his.
Well, then why
I can't say you're wrong, but I know I can't listen to it, and I know the women cannot listen to it whose lives he's ruined. The book begins for me. This story begins, 19 years of reporting, begins with a record review. Someone contacting me in response to a record review to say, you compared R. Kelly to Marvin Gaye. Marvin Gaye had his problems. They were not like Robert's. Robert's problem is young girls. And it ends for me with meeting the very first girl who sued him, who tried to stop him, who was a brilliant singer from the South Side, toured the world singing behind her best friend Aaliyah, can no longer sing anymore, becomes physically ill when she hears Kelly's music. But on top of that, John, I can't listen to any music anymore, she said. Now, I mean, to me, as someone who's, music is my reason for living. That's what Sound Opinions is about. That's what all of my other 10 books are about. That's what my life's been about. The idea of he robbed your virginity, he robbed your teenage years. She attempted suicide after the illegal sexual contact. And then on top of that, you're not even able to listen to music.
We have less than a minute left before we break for the news. We'll finish this conversation after the news. You talk ever so briefly in your book about what if these girls were from affluent white suburbs.
Yeah. It would have been a completely different story. And that's African-American women and men telling me that.
And so who is that an indictment of?
Our society and Chicago and its crazy, racial, two-tiered South and West sides versus the rest.
That's just not the liberal white mainstream media. That's the churches. That's the black community. That's the neighborhoods. That's
the court system. Yeah, that is Chicago.
Good Lord, that's the court system. It's a 128. The book is called Soulless. It's the case against R. Kelly. Was the pub date today?
No, it's June 4th. Last Tuesday.
At the heart of this, what's happening right now, notwithstanding, is that 6 years between his first being indicted in the trial and then the trial itself.
Yeah.
And that's jaw-dropping. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. I'm John Williams. It's 137. This is WGN. We'll spend this segment again with Jim DeRogatis. His book, Soulless, is the case against R. Kelly. What are we listening to here?
Well, listen to what he just sang. I don't see nothing wrong. He doesn't.
Bump and grind.
Yeah, well, bump and grind. I don't see nothing wrong with a little bump and grind. And when you realize what he's talking about is he has pursued 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old underage girls, and don't see nothing wrong. As I said, it's always been confessed right there in the music.
Describe this stage show. Don't describe it in too much detail, but how long at Pitchfork? But it was not just at Pitchfork. But can you describe the sort of send-up that he would do at the end of his concerts?
The thing that was striking to me is when, in the middle of the wait for trial, he went out on tour and the show would end with him having a threesome in a cage or cell with two scantily clad dancers. And then, they would strip and then the lights would go down. And, his attorney said, that wasn't a cage or a cell. And yet the New York Times reviewed the same show and the Chicago Tribune, Greg Cott and me, and we all saw a cell. He said, no, I don't know what they just, a cell is a cell, is a cage. It's the debate we're having about the Mexican border.
You said it was a cell and they said it was a cage.
Yeah, what's the difference?
But there's steel bars.
Yes.
And I think that's a detail that's not really at the
Open to debate.
At the crux of this thing anyway. when he was first indicted on those charges, that was in 2001?
2002. June of 2002, he's indicted on child porn.
And but the trial did not take place.
June of 2008.
Why did it take 6 years for him to be tried? And by the way, he's found not guilty at the
trial. He's acquitted. It is because his attorneys, four of them, $650 an hour, were using all of their powers to game the system. And because Judge Vincent Gaughan methodically ruled in more than 100 motions for the defense, and those motions remain sealed to this day, he was allowing Kelly to tour. He was barring evidence from the case. He limited that case to one girl on one videotape. The three underage girls, public record, who had sued him in civil suits, that was not allowed into evidence. The marriage to Aaliyah at age 15 was not allowed into evidence. What the Sun-Times reported in our first story, December 2000, this was a pattern of predatory behavior. None of that pattern was allowed into evidence. You know, Judge Vincent Gaughan is a bad actor. Consistently by the Judicial Review Commission's cited for his hot temper, his arbitrary ways, scolded by the Supreme Court of Illinois last year for patently unconstitutional behavior.
You know the Gaughan detail. So Gaughan is, of course, the guy that did Laquan McDonald. He did Brown's Chicken. He seems to gravitate to, although I understand it's supposed to be random, but he seems to get the high-profile cases, and he relishes them, right?
It's supposed to be random, and my sources say Gaughan is often given the headache, the heaters, they call them at 26th and Cal.
So after 6 years of this trial that is ultimately acquits R. Kelly, so as you rightly point out, that's either a waste of 6 years of public resources because a man who's not guilty took up 6 years of time, money, and lives of people, or a guy who is guilty got away with it. So there's nothing to celebrate here when it goes 6 years.
Yeah.
What does Gaughan do 2 weeks later?
Gaughan rents out a tavern and holds a party for the prosecution, the defense, and all the press who covered it.
Does
open
that
bar.
Happen sometimes where judges have parties to celebrate cases?
No. The man's a bad actor, John, and he's been on the bench in Chicago since the first Mayor Daley. It's just wrong.
At the heart of the trial, though, was this videotape, which shows sex acts that we don't need to describe here, but the age is as much the
14.
Issue as anything.
Yeah.
There was also a videotape, though, that at that time I could go to Tower Records and buy, right? Is that the same videotape?
No. Chicago in 2000 to 2002 was lousy with videotapes of R. Kelly on the street. You could buy them at the Maxwell Street Flea Market. You could buy them at Tower Records.
But Tower Records is a retail store.
Yes.
That is selling the videotape of him having sex with these minors.
No. The one girl's identity was never verified, so we do not know if she was of legal age or minor. That videotape came to the Sun-Times. That was the first one. 2 weeks after our first story, we gave it to the Special Investigation Unit of the Chicago Police Department. Somewhere in the evidence locker, you know, Kim Fox is talking about this new tape that has surfaced. Somewhere in the evidence locker, there's other tapes, and that girl's still never been identified.
But there is this videotape.
This was common.
But if the jurors were able to see the video that they did see,
yes,
him having sex with this young woman, how is it that they weren't able to convict him then?
Well, contrary to what Mr. Greenberg says, that video was crystal clear. The FBI, one of my favorite little details, the FBI examined, Kelly lived at the time not far from Wrigley on George Street in a converted Baptist church, and he had a log cabin walled, he called it the playroom. The FBI compared the knots in the pine panels in the actual room to what was seen on the video.
So they go, this is the place.
This video matches the place. This was the place.
Okay,
the girl was the girl, and Kelly was Kelly, and all the smoke they threw up, the defense, it was all nonsense.
But maybe it worked, because here's one of the details. They said, okay, when we watch this sex tape, maybe it's not R. Kelly. Maybe given the digital tricks you can play these days, they put the head of R. Kelly on a different body.
This is pre-digital video.
Fair enough.
This is VHS. We talked, Abden Palish and I, my reporter partner, called somebody, and I won't say who they were, but Industrial Light and Magic, perhaps, and they said it would have taken 100,000 hours. In the old technology,
frame by frame. Okay.
To frame by frame.
So
yes.
It wouldn't have been as easy back then. But they said, but look at this. When you see R. Kelly's back, there's a mole in real life, but there isn't on the video, or vice versa. So where it was sort of like, if the glove doesn't fit, you can't convict. If the mole's not there, it's not R. Kelly.
Well, this is Sam Adam Jr., and he was lying through his teeth. He's full of it. You know, there were three FBI forensic experts who said, this is not fake. The mole is right there. What are you talking about, Jack?
Okay.
But, you know, Adam...
How long did the jury go out before they came back with a verdict?
It was like one day.
7 hours.
Yeah.
And what was the racial composition of the jury?
It was mixed. It was half...
More white
half
than
young,
black.
Half woman. No, there were... It was equal parts black and white, men and women, 20-somethings, and retirees.
Did you ever interview any of the jurors? I mean, did you? You referenced this a little while ago. You said they were 85% sure, but you have to be 100% sure.
Well, you know, most of them said they were 100% sure it was Kelly. What they were unsure about was the identity of the girl, since they had never met her and she had never come into court. You know, and Sam Adam, the defense attorney who handled the closing, Sam Adam Jr., his billboards are all over the South Side, you'll see, if you take, let's say you're driving to Michigan. He said, how come they never called her in to say it wasn't her? It's like, yeah, but the defense didn't call her in either. The fact is, the mother, the father, the daughter lied to the grand jury that there was any sort of involvement with Kelly.
Why didn't that girl come forward?
Because many sources say she was paid off. I cannot prove that.
But they could have subpoenaed her, and the prosecution didn't, because they didn't want to put her through the ordeal.
Yes, because, look, there's history in Chicago. There's always history. You know, the Mel Reynolds case, Congressman Mel Reynolds is indicted for having sex with a 16-year-old campaign worker. And during the trial, she recanted and would not take the stand. And as a result, the prosecution's star witness was herself thrown in jail for contempt of court.
Do you think you have
a victim being jailed.
Do you think that was a mistake? I mean, if the end game is R. Kelly goes to jail, then this poor girl is collateral damage, but maybe that's the price we'll collectively agree we're going to pay. Was it a tactical error on the prosecution's part?
I think the original sin of that failure in that case was not the prosecution and not the police, because, you know, they did not speak to me on the record, but every person of conscience, the prosecutors and the Chicago cops, were disgusted and horrified and wanted this man stopped. I think it was Judge Vincent Gaughan, and I think it was Kelly's four defense attorneys.
One of his attorneys, and
they were gaming the system.
One of his attorneys, Ed Jensen, said on his deathbed, right?
He is dying now of cancer, and Neil Steinberg, a fine columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, did an interview with Ed on his deathbed, and Eddie Jensen said, this famous Chicago mob attorney said, yeah, Kelly was guilty.
Guilty as hell, I think, is how he
guilty
put it.
As hell. I don't understand how Judge Vincent Gaughan, Ed Jensen, Sam Adam Jr. are able to shave every morning and look at themselves in the mirror and know that they have loved ones, some of them have grandchildren, who are exactly like those girls on the South Side, except for one thing, John. They're white, or mixed race in Sam Jr.'s case, and Kelly's victims were all black.
So that goes back to what you said earlier. It's an indictment of Chicago. But you just mentioned Neil Steinberg, whose review of the book in the Sun-Times I thought was pretty good. You may disagree with that. But he said that you, if I may paraphrase, he suggested that you're angry at everybody who let this pass without sufficiently criticizing R. Kelly or criticizing the art. Would you talk about that?
Let me give you some names. Tiffany Hawkins, Patrice Jones, Tracy Sampson, Aaliyah Dana Houghton, Lizette Martinez, Dominique Gardner, Gerhonda Johnson, now Gerhonda Pace. These are some of the women who've trusted me to tell their stories. Others I haven't spoken to. That comes from the court records. 48 women whose names I know. Okay? You know, you want to talk about anger. You want to talk about pain. You want to talk about injustice. As a reporter, I amplified the story that they trusted me to tell. They're angry. You bet they're angry. They're angry at the church. They're angry at the school. I mean, CPS. Lena McClin is a choir teacher who is a legend. Her uncle, the Reverend Thomas A. Dorsey, invented gospel music. And Kelly would come to her choir class and pick up sophomores at Kenwood Academy. CPS, all right? Where was the schools? You know, Reverend Jackson, the day of Kelly is indicted on child porn, says there are bigger problems in the world than R. Kelly. Everybody failed these girls. I just never saw these women as any different than my daughter, John, who's white. Except that. I guess that was the difference. They didn't matter? I don't understand that. I mean, we are talking women who tried to kill themselves, some of them, after this sexual contact with Kelly.
That is
not done to be famous. That is not done to get rich.
I know, but I think, you know what's amazing to me is how many compliant females and families he found. I think Steinberg said that he couldn't find sufficient sympathy for some of these people. And I don't know that I'd use that word, but I would say I was mystified at well into the story, knowing that he's predatory, how many women continued to not only acquiesce to him, but then later when they finally escape his cult, they still profess a love for R. Kelly.
No one ever hated him. No one ever told us, we hate this MF-er. It was always, brother needs help, brother needs to stop. I don't know about you, I'm watching When They See Us, Ava DuVernay, about the Central Park Five. We know there are black and brown men wrongly, very wrongly in prison. I mean, Jesus, the Innocent Project's in Chicago, right? Look, let's take race out of it. Let's look at toddlers and tiaras. Let's look at all those white parents who allow their 6 and 7 and 8 and 9
By the way, Toddlers and Tiaras was one of R. Kelly's favorite shows.
Yeah. But, you know, it's the idea that the preteen beauty pageant, and that's big in the South, and many white parents, you know, JonBenet Ramsey's parents, right? So you have these black parents whose daughters want to be singers, and Kelly says, your daughter's talented, I will help her make her a star.
He says this over and over again.
It says over and over again. And it'll be different for me, the parents say. A, he was acquitted. I know there's some weirdness there, but I'm never going to leave my daughter's side. I am going to be next to her. And didn't the gymnasts victimized by Dr. Nasser, didn't their parents say the same thing?
I don't know that they knew.
Yeah, but we're going to trust the team to take care of my daughter.
But they didn't know that the coach or the doctor had a history with these parents.
But if we go to the parishes, Catholic parishes, I say this as a former altar boy, grew up Roman Catholic, 12 years of Catholic schooling. We go to parishes. You know, parents know that Father John's a little weird, but I'm going to trust my boy Father John. I mean, I don't, again, we're demonizing these parents because they're black. And we're not thinking about, you know, you show me a perfect parent, John. My daughter just graduated college. Melody's 22. I love her to pieces. I wasn't perfect.
We're out of time. Do you think that R. Kelly's going to go to jail for this latest series of indictments?
Not on the Illinois case. It's weak. I think the federal indictments are good. I think he's going to go to jail for tax evasion like Al Capone did. I think the feds are going to get him for tax evasion in the great Chicago tradition.
Read Solis, The Case Against R. Kelly, if you are interested in a Chicago story, if you're interested in Chicago, if you're interested in the psychosis of how somebody preys on young girls like this, if you know somebody who's a journalist or a journalism student, this is must reading. Nicely done, Jim DeRogatis. Thanks for coming in.
Well, you know, we've done this before. Thank you for your interest always in this story.
We've never done this before. I call you and say, hey, what do you think of the Elton John thing? This is a different conversation. I appreciate you coming in.
You bet.
The book is called Solace.